Welcome back to the Paula Gordon Show. Bill raised the issue of the global economy, the information technology. Your specific focus in the last 4 years has been Korea. And it seemed to me that Korea offers a very interesting, forgive the word, case study of much about which you are speaking, that you have the North, which you characterize as something of an Oriental despotism, and the South that represents much of what you've been speaking in terms of this burgeoning economy, this great energy, where on one side of an artificial line you have people starving to death because the economy's falling apart. On the other side, you have awesome growth. Does Korea represent what we're talking about, writ small and writ large?
Paula, you probably were listening in on a conversation I had several weeks ago with former Secretary of State George Shultz.
I was. I absolutely was.
Out in San Francisco. I had made a talk at the World Affairs Council in San Francisco. Secretary Shultz was there. And he, since he retired from being secretary, has become a good friend of mine. I covered him as Secretary of State, and then he was not my friend. He was somebody I was covering, and I had to keep my distance. At any rate, he said to me after this speech, he said, you know, this is the greatest test tube case in the entire world. There's absolutely no difference between the Koreans in the North and the Koreans in the South. That is, there's no difference in their history. There's no difference in their personality.
They're homogeneous people, aren't they?
Absolutely homogeneous people. But it tells you what political systems and economic systems, how important they are. As you say, on one side, South Korea is the 11th largest economy in the entire world. On the other side, North Korea is unable to feed its people. It's collapsing. It's a failed state.
Quite remarkable.
Absolutely.
I was talking with a friend this morning, and he asked what we were doing, and I told him, and I mentioned Asia, and his first reaction, and he works for a large company who does a lot of business internationally, his first response was, if Japan and Korea don't get their act straight economically, they're going to take us all down. Is that a...
Well, they are very important economies and very big economies. What started in Thailand with the problems in Southeastern Asia and then Indonesia and so on... In a sense, it's tempting to think that it spread to Korea and could spread to Japan. It's a little different. They're different kinds of economic situations. South Korea is having problems. Some of its companies are overextended. Their banks are overextended, but they've been overextended for 30 or 40 years. The Japanese, after having this big bubble that burst in Japan a few years ago, started back onto the growth path, and due to Southeast Asia and due to some other domestic situations, it's going into more or less a no-growth situation for the time being. There are problems in the Asian economies, and the Asian economies are so central now to the world economy, the global economy, that I think, indeed, if there was a real depression or some economic cataclysm in Korea and Japan, it would be very dramatic and it would have drastic effects. Having said that, let me say is I don't believe that will happen. I think they'll get out of their problems and move along. But, you know, who knows?
Can you see a mechanism? And I'm asking that really. In some ways, Korea and Japan have provided the model for East Asian development.
Particularly Japan.
And in a lot of ways, Korea has followed suit. And a lot of it is predicated on available monies, fairly active engagement by the government with the allocation of capital. And it appears to an outside observer that at least in Korea and to perhaps a lesser extent in Japan, those approaches, those models that have made them so successful are now catching up with them. And as they catch up with Korea and Japan, and to the extent that other developing economies, the so-called Asian tigers, are following along behind that, that something needs to give. Either the model needs to change, or there needs to be some patching up done, or some sort of significant alteration in the way their economies are managed. Economies and their politics.
The model, if you're talking about economic models, have been changing, perhaps not as much as they should change or will change in the future. But the Japanese particularly have realized that they can't run their trading companies the way they used to run their trading companies. They've got to be much more flexible. That the global economy and the information age, as we talked about earlier, are things which require a great deal more agility and ability to shift and change and so on than has been true in most of these companies. And they're changing. In Korea, you have a different set of problems, related set of problems. They have had companies, conglomerates, which they call chaebols, big conglomerates on the Japanese model, some of which have not been as successful as they had expected and are deeply in debt. And the question is how they're going to dig themselves out of this problem. Will the debts and will the failure of some of these big conglomerates pull down the rest of it? Well, I doubt it. But they realize that there have got to be more changes made. And they can't just rely on the government to bail them out the way they did before.
Well, and part of the, and this begins to affect us in this country, part of the way out typically, historically, has been to use export as the way of correcting these kinds of problems. And exports typically mean, you know, a substantial portion that goes to the United States. And we've been, you know, sort of testy with the Japanese for years on the subject of exports, and are becoming fairly testy with the Koreans and with the Chinese. So there's, the, you know, there's already a how to say, precedent for conflict in the economic sphere that looks like it has a potential for escalating.
Export-led economies have been the engines of growth for those economies. It's true. And there is a danger that they're going to try to simply export themselves out of their difficulties. But let's not forget, these are tremendous economies in themselves. The export portion of most of these economies is a relatively small portion. It's a very important portion. But these are now tremendously large economies. As I said, the South Korean economy is the 11th largest economy in the entire world. Japan is second only to the United States as an economy. China, I'm not sure where they, depends on how you calculate China, yeah. But it's big and it's coming up.
Yeah.
And we have the World Trade Organization. We have various other ways of trying to have countries work together and not fight each other economically, as happened in the 1920s. And if countries go to doing that,
were followed by the 30s.
Exactly. It's going to be very, very dangerous. And I think most economic authorities in the countries realize that. Certainly the United States is going to be reminding them of it.
I'm in charge of naive questions here. If the South of Korea and the North of Korea could find a political solution to their family fight, wouldn't that begin to feed the people of the North and give an outlet to the people of the South? Wouldn't that also solve some economic problems for them?
Of course it would. But it's like saying, you know, if you had a piece of ham and then you had a couple pieces of bread and some lettuce, you might have a ham sandwich.
It's the conditional part that's a problem.
Yeah, if they could, it would be.
However.
No ham sandwich this week.
Yeah. You know, Korea is a substantially big country. We think of it as a little country because it's surrounded by China, Russia, and Japan, which are three very,
very big
powerful and much more populous countries. But if you put the two halves of Korea together, they come to almost 70 million people. Huh? There are about 45 million in the south and 22 or 23 million in the north. That is more population than any country in Western Europe except for the United Germany. And it would be a powerful combination. And they will be together. But how they get together and when they get together, that is the rub. And as you said, the conditional part of that sentence is the key issue.
Well, and there is no obvious easy path. I mean, the tendency is to think, you know, that we can just sort of declare victory as we think we did with Russia and with the former Soviet Union and Eastern Europe. And then everything will go smashingly. It hasn't gone all that well in Eastern Europe and in the former Soviet Union. But there's no obvious easy path to get the Koreas together, is there?
There is not.
And in fact, most of the scenarios are fairly ugly, aren't they?
Many of the scenarios, and I have to say the most likely scenarios, are dangerous. And how this is going to happen, I don't know. I'm utterly convinced that it will happen, and that is to say that Korea is going to be united again. It was, as we said before, a homogeneous country with a long tradition. It's one of the oldest societies in the world. It was suddenly divided in 1945 through no fault of the Koreans by the United States in order that the Soviet Union not just take the entire peninsula at the end of World War II. The U.S. drew a line across the middle of the peninsula at which it would divide the occupation duties with the Soviet Union. This was intended to be simply a temporary line, but as the Cold War got underway and deepened and two rival regimes were created, it became a semi-permanent line.
And we were not occupying, I mean, Korea was not our enemy. It was the Japanese who were in Korea that had the Soviet Union coming in and the Americans coming in. We don't want to forget that.
We will come back to this complexity in just a moment. We're speaking with Don Oberdorfer, who for many years has been a reporter and who has focused the last 4 years on Korea. This is the Paula Gordon Show. Bill Russell is with me with Don Oberdorfer, and we're going to be right back. Please stay tuned.